A warm welcome indeed here from Malaga in Spain. This is our second Liquid Experience call entitled Legal and Marketing, Friends or Foes. My name is Roger and I will lead you through this session. And as always, we have four guests with us, which I will introduce in a moment. But first, I want to give you a little introduction and tell you what gave me the idea for this topic of legal marketing. It came to me while I was watching a US TV series called Better Call Saul. The show is about an ingenious lawyer who, despite his superb lawyering skills, just cannot seem to get ahead. He's not successful until he changes his name to Saul Goodman, which is a short form of It's All Goodman, Saul Goodman, puts huge advertising billboards on the side of the highways, makes TV commercials, and starts working for the Mexican drug cartel. Then he becomes successful. And when the phone rings, he picks it up and says, Saul Goodman, speedy justice for you. And this slogan, you know, speedy justice for you, that to me seems like the essence of legal marketing. I give to you the justice you deserve, fast and easy. And personally, I have to say, I think there's nothing wrong with that. As a non-lawyer, it surprised me to learn that in Germany until 1990, marketing, the art of contracting or attracting customers by identifying and satisfying their needs, was practically prohibited for law firms. Logos could not be used anyway, and a law firm's listing of its area of specialization in the public phone book led to a lawsuit in which the Federal German Court of Justice finally ruled in favor of the defendant. So since then, German law firms have increasingly been relying on web pages and social media to promote their services, but aggressive marketing and anything resembling blunt advertisement are still very much frowned upon in the German legal guild.
Public phone book, he put his logo there and just what he does, his areas of expertise, and then he got sued. And but German Federal Court of Justice ruled in his favor, so he was allowed to do that. And since then, German law firms have been putting up content on web pages and using social media. And but it's interesting that before it wasn't allowed. Now, I find that strange because I do think that at the end, law firms are just like any other commercial entities, right? They're trying to make business, trying to find customers. And even in the courtroom, you could say the most sacred place of the legal system, there you could look at lawyers' activities as a kind of a marketing, right? They're trying to sell something, their version of the case, their truth to an audience, juries or judges. Case or they lose the case in the end. So now the court is a special marketplace where certain procedural guidelines and professional rules apply. But at the end of the day, you win or you lose. So I kind of look at it this way. In some way, all lawyering is a kind of marketing for the truth and for justice. And note that if truth or justice were self-evident, there wouldn't be a need for a legal case. So obviously, truth is not self-evident, and people seeking justice are relying on professional lawyers to get it for them. So what could be more natural for lawyers and law firms to do whatever is within their power, to use whatever means within the limits of the law, to get the attention of their potential clients and to get their business? That's what I'm asking myself. That's what I'm going to ask for. Experts that are with me on the panel, welcome again. We have with us today Nicole Giantonio. She's the VP and Head of Global Marketing at Elevate Services, a US-based legal service technology and consulting company. We have with us also Tom Bregelmann, who's an attorney at law, both in Germany and in New York State. So I'm working at Schallast, which is a German company, law firm based on mergers and acquisitions and financial transactions. We have with us Nina Stöckel. She's senior director for legal operations at Merck, a German multinational science and technology company. And last not least, we have with us Dr. Pascal Schneider, used to be the head of communication and brand at Deloitte, and now working as an independent consultant. Welcome to the four of you. Great to have you here. Nicole, you're the American on the call. Let me start with you. Now, as head of marketing for a consulting firm that offers legal services as well, when you see a show like that with a guy kind of marketing himself like that, is that something where you say, wow, we can learn something from that? Or is that something where you say that has nothing to do with the reality of marketing legal services?
That has nothing to do with reality.
That's a clear answer.
I can tell you, though, in my home in New York City, you see these ads. You see them in the morning. You see them coming through. Mostly not. We work in the corporate space, and that is definitely not part of our world in marketing. I do think there's an opportunity for lawyers in whatever practice they are in to communicate what they do to the market, to inform, to educate, to provide content that's of value. And that, you know, it can be done in today's world, marketing. We talk about what is the client trying to achieve, and then we try to present a message that really aligns with what the client is trying to achieve. There's a Harvard Business School case on this. It's called Jobs to be Done. You also see this conveyed as Work to be Done. And if you use that type of methodology, you get a much higher level. It's more communication than it is marketing or advertising.
Which might have to do with you being in the corporate business world, and this guy and many lawyers, single lawyers, are doing it for private people, you know, but nonetheless, very interesting. Tom, over to you. I got to quote this here because I find it so fascinating. In the About section of your LinkedIn account, you write, "This is a great time to be a modern lawyer." And at the end, you write, "Attorney advertising, prior results do not guarantee a similar outcome." Now, what do you mean by that?
It's all true.
It's all true.
It is attorney advertising, and prior results do indeed not guarantee a similar outcome. And it is a great time to be a modern lawyer. I put this into my headline on LinkedIn when I joined Leverton, which was a legal tech company that was later acquired. And they had the idea to, in a way, almost disrupt legal services. And while working there, I could see that it is very powerful what you can do with software. But legal advice, I mean, lawyers might sometimes say it's court tailored. We can never be replaced. So much can be done with machines and software. But essentially, our advice is our stock and trade, as allegedly Lincoln once said. And that is, and you need to be modern, I think. But you still need to be an attorney if you want to give legal advice. But I digress. What I like about this sentence, prior results do not guarantee a similar outcome, and that you have to put this wherever you go as an American lawyer, is in a way it shows you the older experience the American legal system has with attorneys doing advertising and legal advice as a business. It's older, and then, of course, you've had a lot of bad things happening, ambulance chasers and what have you, that are in a way the results if you open up a marketing for lawyers. And then you have severe ethics codes in every state in the United States and in other very often common law jurisdictions that are in a way you have to have a test on this before you pass the bar exam. And these rules have teeth, whereas under German law, we also, in a way, we have a general code for good legal good behavior of lawyers, but we have no spelled out ethics. Mm-hmm. And we have some case law, but it's a mixed bag. It's not really very clear. Whereas in the U.S., I had my ethics class before the bar exam, and then they just said, you cannot sleep with your client. Not a lot. Right? It's just spelled out. I like this American thing. It's like, you can't do this. Sometimes Europeans laugh about this, right? If you put on a beer, wait, if you drink this, you get drunk. Yeah. I know. But on the other hand, yeah. You have been warned. Okay, so that's it. So I like this. That comes with marketing, truth and advertising. Like it's in Germany, for instance, you can become a specialist in certain subjects called Fachanwalt, where you have to show 80 cases in doing certain things. In employment law, you have to have been in court, but nobody really checks if you have been good or bad. You just have to have 80 cases.
So we'll come back to these issues of ethics, which I think are at the center of this marketing topic, and also to the differences of American and German legal systems. Let's move on, first of all, to our third guest, Nina. You are working in legal operations at in-house legal department. So you're actually engaging lawyers and law firms. And from your client and buyer perspective, are there any do's and don'ts that you recommend lawyers to be aware of when they're presenting themselves?
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Roger, for asking. So I think it's from a client perspective, advertising is maybe nice to see, but what really counts is the results and the relationship you build with the law firm. So an ad or a nice slogan could maybe attract you, but what is behind is the results you achieve during a relationship and what you gain also in working with this law firm. What I saw during our panel exercise we did last year and successfully finalized this is it is really a different approach you see from US-based law firms and also more European or even German-based law firms. As highlighted also by Nicole and you in the beginning, it is maybe a bit more aggressive, a bit more outspoken, a bit more, highlighting more the achievements without pointing that much expertise is all behind that. But on the contrary, if you look at the German law firm, it's all about expertise and it's not emotional at all. It's not really highlighting these successes or even embracing these successes. It is more fact driven and pointing out on the expertise. And I think maybe finding a bit a balance between these two extremes would be also beneficial. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I considered in listening to a lot of law firms is actually they don't listen to the clients. They just do what they think is the program they should provide. Yeah, they tell you what they did, what they can, where they're good at. But it's more one-sided. It's not really a dialogue. And this is something I found very interesting. I do not want to judge on this. I think it's absolutely necessary that they present themselves. But it is really more a one-way street. At least
very interesting. And I also hope we will come back to get to that later, because you always think that client centricity is so crucial, you know. But when I hear that, you wonder if it's true. Pascal. You worked as head of communication and brand at one of the big four. And in our prep call, one of the things you said to me was that you had a lot of meetings and communications with brilliant lawyers, people who knew their area inside out, but sometimes wondered if they were aware of their style of communication. If they realized that the way they communicated to others, how that might be perceived and how it might actually harm them and harm their own interests. Can you elaborate on that and give some examples maybe?
Yeah, thank you. Not only harm themselves, harm the company maybe. So it's not a Deloitte specific thing. And let me say something, this should be very important to know, and we know it already. We are all living in our bubbles, and I guess that lawyers are living in a very special bubble. And this bubble is very high concentrated on paragraphs and all the things, you know, they are all written paragraphs, and this is a framework where they feel safe, where they are experts in. And then we come to this moment where they want, and this is was what Nina already mentioned, was that they are really great egos, they are experts, they know what they know, and they want to communicate. But then you have this external world outside of the bubble. And this is something where then you have a clash, and where you as a communicator and as a specialist have to bring these worlds together. And this is, I guess, still something very, very important and really, really interesting thing, because then you really have to convince your colleagues and these experts to take care what is the public, what could be the public reaction on your positioning. And this is something we should discuss further with, especially with Nina, is what is the client thinking about this thing and how we bring his communication together with the communication of the lawyer, of this expert, and his company he is working for. Mm-hmm. And this is something where you maybe as a freelanced and as a one person show, you can communicate in a complete different way. But when you are part of a bigger family, and especially when you are part of a company with working in different fields, with a lot of different customers, you really have to take care about all the things that are going on. And maybe later on, we will talk about a few steps how to do this kind of communication, personal communication and company communications in a way, structured way, to really take care that you don't earn a shitstorm, that you don't harm yourself, your client, or your company. And this is a quite interesting ride.
Yeah. And very briefly, if you can you give us an example, not necessarily from Deloitte, but just from where you encountered, where you saw something or heard something, where you thought this is something that maybe Deloitte should think about again?
It's a very neutral example where we had a lawyer, was one of my customers just a few months ago, and he was asking me, can you support me, please, because I want to communicate a client a job towards media, because the media is highly interested in. And so then I asked, okay, so what is your positioning? What is your message? And then he explained a lot, and I was writing all the things down. And then I was asking him, so what's the position of your client? And the client was a complete different view on the topic. And then I said, we need to talk to the client. And then the client said, please, I don't want to have any communications, please. And this was something where then my job was done, because we did no communications. But of course, it was the best solution for both. And sometimes it's better not to communicate.
And it was interesting to see that your client wasn't aware of his client's interests.
Exactly. So at least I was a moderator between both. And it was interesting because they know each other very well. And this client decided for this lawyer. But they lived in their bubble, concentrated on their topic and on the issue they had, but not realizing what's going on outside and how it could harm the client or the lawyer. It was an independent lawyer. And so step by step, we then found a solution. And now we think about further communications, but not specific on a client. It's more about his expertise. And this is something where he can position himself. It's about identity, but we will talk about this later on, of course.
All right, all right. Well, thank you, the four of you, for your introductory statement. So now the foundation is laid, the floor is open. Let's have a discussion, the four of us. The people listening, please do use the chat. Write your opinions there. You can communicate amongst each other while we keep talking. And who wants to go first? Who has any ideas on marketing and legal?
Maybe I would ask Tom, what are your experiences with clients? Did you ever ask and reach out or even call and check what is really appreciated or what helps to build the relationship?
I'm sorry, my boys are fighting in the back here. I have to tell you something here. Guys, don't do this. They left the door open.
Okay,
let the survivor win and then go shopping with me. I'm sorry. So, excuse me. This is exactly what I did not want, and I instructed them before. But okay. Anyhow, problem is because everybody in the larger law firms and with the larger companies as clients in business law is that everybody is so busy. So we want to deliver our word product and we get instructions, and it is also, and clients are also not very, very often very clear in communicating what they want. And then you are in a way second guessing, what do they really want? Then do we want to annoy them with so many questions? So the day to day can overrun this, right? Where you in a way can't meet. And then how can I put it? And because law firms of a larger size don't work with single practitioners. So you work as a team, and you have team dynamics there that the client might not know. You might have the partner who likes to meet with the client and have a nice lunch, whereas the associates can't bill that time, and they're under stress in a way fulfill their yearly billable hours, whereas the partner is not concerned about this anymore because he has the client. He's measured on a different scale, and then you might end up with a meeting where the associates or the employed lawyers are a bit in a hurry, maybe not as emotional as you want to be because they want to get out of there, right? So the question is, if on the law firm side, how do you reward in a way an emotional investment in the client, right? If you don't do that, you will have a lot of passive resistance on part of the employed lawyers. They don't, as long as the big law firms bill by the hour and measure them by the hour, there's a clear incentive not to do as an employed lawyer anything else than bill the time. right? And that's in a way why they come across as robotic. And that has to, that's, I think that's a big thing that has to change, right? Because we can, it's crazy. Some big law firms still demand 2,000 billable hours. It's almost impossible. And when can you then be emotional or think about the needs of your client if you are reviewing documents and all that? I'm sorry, Roger, you have to stop me if I'm talking too much, but that makes it hard for larger law firms to be in a unified way emotional. And what good is it if the partners understand your needs, but the people doing the work don't, because they're...
Nicole, first...
Go ahead.
Because Nina, you asked Tom and Nicole. Nicole, please.
Just a quick point. So I think that's where the support functions come in, right? So we do regular NPS, CSAT, so Net Promoter Scores, CSAT. We do them quarterly on all our business units. We do them in our, it's built into our technology products so that they're, we're constantly gathering feedback. We also do an annual survey. We do surveys at the end, and these are short surveys. And we ask if the customer wants a follow-up. We're actually in that process now. We have, you know, we surveyed 700 customer contacts, and we've had about 10 ask for a call back, and one of the executives that's not involved with the account calls them back and has a short conversation. And we learn, you know, how we're doing, what kind, how can we communicate better? We are collecting that information. We do year over year evaluations of all of that data to make sure that we're improving, changing the way we communicate, doing more in writing, doing more verbally if the customers would like us. I think to your point, Tom, it's, we're not taking the time of our billable resources to do that. We're taking the time of the other business executives that we have within our
organization
and using technology.
That's I think really, really impressive. And what comes to my mind is, as you also mentioned this, it's not really about advertising or marketing, it's about communication. And is this something you also train your lawyers at? We heard that the associates might not have the time to do so, but really building that skill?
I mean, I'm happy. I know Pascal's got more direct experience with this, but a lot of what we do in our organization, and we're 1,200 people, about 700 lawyers in that mix, we provide a lot of communication to our teams. We provide them with assets. I know it sounds crazy or old, but we do a newsletter. It's electronic. There's about 10 assets. They're multimedia. All tools that our teams can use to start a conversation, enhance a conversation, introduce a conversation. And then as far as the feedback we get from customers, we are very involved in how to take the feedback we get and not, we've had instances where people have said, how dare they? How dare they give us that feedback? And that's, of course, not the right response. If you look at the end of my email signature right now, it says feedback is a gift. And it allows any customer that we're communicating with across the globe to just hit that tag on our email and provide feedback at that moment. So there is a tremendous amount of coaching that is part of that.
Mm-hmm. Maybe to come to two points that I guess are important. And Nina, yes, we did, and we did workshops with our lawyers and to raise awareness when communication is needed, when communication is not needed, and how to handle these different target groups outside of the bubble. And then we have, this is something you have to educate, you have to support your colleagues, because they come and live in a complete different world. And that's fine. That's why you have experts for communications, but you need a common understanding. And this is something that guides me to another point. Of course, you can do workshops, but much more important is that you have to define an early stage moment where you say, on a project with a client, we need to discuss with the client how we want to communicate and what could come up as questions from media, maybe from social media. Something could happen unexpected, to discuss in an early stage what could be the strategy and how we can work together and how we can align our messages and how we can decide together how we want to communicate. And this is something, this is not a special lawyer thing. It's my experience when you work with engineers. They have great innovations, great projects, great things, and then they come very late to the point, and now we have to tell someone that we are great. And then the moment is already a little bit too late, because then you want to push that product in the market, you want to present it, and then you start very, very late this discussion that needs time. It's about identity. It's about creating an identity, a joint identity for this issue or for this client relationship. You need to align your messages with the client, with your company, inside your lawyer's team. You have to define target groups. You have to define strategies how to handle reputation, risk and reputation issues. This takes time, and sometimes it's then you got a call from a journalist, investigative journalist, and he's asking, oh, I have some papers on my table. Let's talk about this right now, because tomorrow morning I will write an article. Then it's too late to discuss. And these are things, I guess, on both ends, educate and enable the colleagues, open their awareness and their mindset on communications. And on the other side, support them in thinking and working on communications on a very early stage.
So that makes a lot of sense to me. One thing that I just heard and that I want to ask you, who actually has the relationship with the client? Is it the person or is it the firm? So because when Nina, when you talked, you said it's about relationship building. And then Nicole, you said, well, we hear the support functions come in and we do a lot of good things. But the client might still say, I don't want the support function. I want that guy that is actually representing me and preventing me from going to jail. Or, you know,
actually in our company, it's really the lawyers that the in-house lawyers that work with the external lawyers. And this is where I also ask for feedback. So my opinion is not that important than the opinion of the lawyers working day to day with the externals. Mm-hmm. So I'm capturing that feedback. I have my own observation, of course, but I'm not the decisive factor here. So I'm helping to build the panel. I'm organizing the whole process. We do a review. We help to set up these meetings, and I facilitate. But in the end, the result and the judgment is with the lawyers. Yeah.
Makes sense. Yeah. Maybe we can come back to a topic that we had at the beginning, the difference between America and Germany. Maybe, Tom, you're the best person to talk about that a little bit. When it comes to marketing, Nicole, from the prep talk I had with you, I learned that there exists something like the Legal Marketing Association in the US. I wasn't even aware of that. But I don't think anything like that exists in Germany. And we also heard some of the things, Nina, when you talked about that the Germans are always to content and expertise, and not talking too much about themselves, whereas I think not only the late American president, but in general, the American culture is not afraid of saying, hey, I am good, I am great. You know, we Germans, we don't like that this much. But Tom, I want to hear from you how you perceive that cultural difference in attitude, maybe, and how you see it reflect in the lawyers' behaviors.
Well, as I said before, the legal advice as a business is much older in the U.S. So I think there's more experience there of what works and what doesn't work. And then there are these things that you see on the New York subway, dial 1-800 I am hurt, or dial 1-800 bankruptcy. You don't want to do that, but maybe you do. I don't know. Maybe it's better than nothing. So we don't have that. And maybe we don't have that in Germany is maybe not such a big problem. I'm not. The differences are there. My experience is there's more allowed in the US, but then there comes more responsibility that you actually have to deliver on this.
If you don't,
whereas I know that German law firms do a lot of marketing, and they do a lot. They do write articles for journals. You know, there are a lot of journals that potential clients read, or the potential new hires read. A lot of material is produced, but the question is for me always, In the German market, is the heart really in it? Are people going through the motions because, damn, we have to do marketing, so we got to do it, right? But I think that's it. Where I would say that Americans are more happy warriors and are happy to do marketing because they like to sell stuff and are happy about the sale. I mean, of course, a German lawyer is also happy if you have a client engagement. No question about that. In theory, it could be better in Germany, but it isn't. And then you might want to ask yourself, why is that, right?
Is that missing? Do we need a legal marketing association in Germany? Is that something that people should do? Nicole, what do you think? What does the Legal Marketing Association even do?
Yeah, so let's talk. So it's really a, so by the way, the majority of the marketing that's being done in the B2B world is focused, Nina, appropriately, I think, on expertise, right? Yes, so we're talking about where we have strengths. So for our company, we're heavily invested in technology and digital and artificial intelligence, machine learning. So a lot of what we're communicating is how to make our customers more comfortable with the approach of using that technology, the fact that it is about data and data analytics. So we're really communicating that expertise, and we're basically talking about how that's impacted the customers that we're working with. So the customers say, you know, I'm willing to communicate the fact that by using technology and our outside counsel guideline adherence, we're able to have better control of our costs. So that's the kind of education that we're doing. So the Legal Marketing Association and the members that are there, we're talking about the best ways that we can communicate, not using adjectives, mm-hmm. using data, using
facts,
storytelling, and a storytelling in a factual way. And we, I can say an approach that we've taken is this idea of impact. We ask our customers to work with us to communicate the impact a change that they've made using our services has had on their law department or their law firm. And that's in the Legal Marketing Association is really there to help all of the marketers talk about the best ways to communicate, again, the facts in a way that is appreciated by our legal professional buyers and colleagues, right? Because we have to match our legal professionals to the legal professionals either at the law firms or law departments that we're working with. So
isn't that just another element where actually legal turns out to be very similar to other functions in the corporation? And Pascal, you brought up the engineers. They're also in their bubble. And now we hear, okay, the best way to market yourself is by showing that the client had success, you know?
Roger, I can I point out, you asked me about
Nicole, you want to just answer and then Tom, you, okay?
So I think one point around that is, you know, it's about having success, but it's really the strength of what we're communicating and working with clients on is about, we really want to ensure that everyone is comfortable with the situation, right? So it's not about making anyone uncomfortable. So the whole idea of social media, press releases, Pascal, you were talking about, I mean, the whole thing has to work for both sides. Mm-hmm. And there's a cost, you know, legal finally has to really tell the business what they're spending, why they're spending it, and where their risk, you know, basically that they're protecting risk. And that is why businesses like ours, marketing has become more important, because the legal departments and law firms are in much more, there's much more attention to how they're spending those dollars. So that's a lot of what we're doing on our side is trying to say, I know you're under pressure, legal department. I know you're under pressure, law firm. We can come in, talk to you about efficiency, talk to you about justification. And that's a big part of what we're doing today. It's not, hey, I'm trying to pull business from someone else. We're trying to help our customers, you know, be able to talk to the business leaders around them about the need for the spend that's happening in legal. It's about risk and protection and compliance, of course.
Can completely agree.
Roger.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, you asked me before about the differences between Germany and the US, yes. And I forgot to mention one thing, the way the lawyers are organized. I'm a member of the bar in the state of New York, which is just a formality so that I can appear there. I pay $200 per every 2 years, and I can join a bar association if I want to. And they're mostly commercially minded. They protect the lawyers, maybe against legal tech companies, but they're in a way open-minded and very active. Whereas in Germany, you have a governmental statutory system that every lawyer has to join. We have to pay high fees for that. And there are elections for it, but people usually don't participate. And the bureaucrats really in these organizations are very nice people, but they're very traditionally minded. They fought tooth and nail any opening of marketing in Germany. It's always the German Constitutional Court that had to take a tooth and nail, fighting tooth and nail over it from them. And they still, in a way, focus on the traditional sole or little practitioner law firm, and really actually don't like bigger international law firms. In a way, they're they don't like it. It was opened up by case law, and they are against it, and they're not helping. They make it hard to advertise. You could always, they have a certain sanction power over you. And I think they're mostly dysfunctional because the election system doesn't work. They're not in a way interested in modern legal advice. And then they always say that they are protecting in a way the rule of law and no one else, which is, it's great if they do it, but it's not, they're the only ones doing it. And it's so, and that is actually holding people back because you have this organization that is in place, that is traditional. It's not helping, it's blocking you. And you are by law a member. They even comment on statutes in a way that I don't like, but I have to contribute to that, which is kind of freaky. Yeah,
very German indeed.
Yeah. Yes.
I don't know. Did you want to say something, or because
I completely agree. completely agree to this point. And I would like to mention another thing. We have these different cultures and the different situations. But then we have to think about the other thing. And we could ask all the colleagues and people joined this call here, this session, to ask who is really part of doing communications on LinkedIn. We are connected via LinkedIn with some of you. Some lawyers are on Twitter. There are complete different approaches how to use these social media channels, for example, in the US and in Germany, for example. So complete different target groups. There are very, very cool lawyers already on Twitter, for example. I'm following one, and he's really creating interesting, a little bit private content. He has three or four chickens, and he's making pictures of the chickens in the garden. And then maybe a few hours later, he said, "No, it was a busy day. I relax with a nice glass of wine." And then a few hours later on Twitter, you have a 1.5 minute video he's doing, and he's just explaining a very complex law issue. Mm-hmm. And this combination, for example, on Twitter in Germany works very well. And he's doing that. He's investing time in it, but he really creates his own target groups, and he gains followers. And for example, in Germany, the situation on Twitter is they are almost politicians, journalists, and crazy people. Yeah, but for him, it could be very interesting to have a good connection to journalists. They follow him. They see he's an expert in this and that. And then, of course, someday they call him and they said, "I saw you. I'm following you since 2 years. And now I'm writing an article about topic XY. And I would like to invite you to become part of this article or interview." Oh, how great. He does not need any more communicator who is guiding him through this way of communicating himself. And these are things everybody can do something, but he needs to be aware of the activity about his messaging, how he wants to be seen in the broader audience and target groups. And then, of course, he has to be aligned with the communication of his company. This is some kind, I call it freedom in a framework. And when you understand this, you can do your own communications. And it's not about positioning themselves every time. I'm the greatest. I'm Superman. I'm Superwoman. No, it's about I have knowledge and I share this knowledge. And if you like, then we can have a dialogue and we can have a further discussion about this, or maybe we create a new client situation or a new business or job, whatever. And these are also things, this is completely different from Germany to France, from Germany to Italy, and especially to the US. You have the different media channels, and you have to be aware, especially when you are in Germany or when you are in the US, what is the right channel, what is the right activity, and how I want to position there. And this is also very interesting for everyone here in this call to think where I'm already active and maybe where can I improve my communications. Yeah. But it's good then to be connected with the communication guys in your company. This is something, you see, Nina, and this is like, yeah, please.
No.
Alone. But this is the freedom in a framework. But Nina, you can maybe explain a little bit about the crazy guys at Merck.
I just wanted to jump on one thing you said with this initial example you had with this lawyer who wanted to present the big success, and the client said, no, we don't talk about it. And I think this is also a bit the pity of if you're working for corporates, for big companies like Merck, we have a position that we don't talk about these things. Yeah, and this is something, because not that we do not value all the great work of the lawyers we're working with, we highly appreciate it. We have like one-on-one discussions, we give feedback, but we don't talk about in public about that. And this is something that makes it then not that easy for the law firms to talk about the impact they created. So you need to find maybe more creative ways on how to transport that somehow in a different way. And I have to admit that's not easy. Maybe it's also not not that fair, because you have a great working relationship, but unfortunately the client does not want to talk about that in the public.
Nicole, you're not...
I would like to add maybe one short thing. Just imagine one lawyer would post on Twitter or on LinkedIn something that he created for himself, and he's naming Merck. And this goes viral. This is a huge disaster for the relationship. This is a huge disaster for the lawyer. This really harms the company, the client company. And these are things you really have to be aligned, and you really have to know what to do and what not to do. And sometimes, as I already mentioned, no communication sometimes is the best communication.
Yeah, or at least your law firm needs to understand the why you're not communicating. Yeah. It's not that you do not value the work and the relationship and the outcome and the impact, so all that. But we talk about our products, the achievements we do in technology and improving patients' life. We not talk about relationship or impact that law firms are making, unfortunately.
It's very interesting, Nina. We find certain customers are okay with contributing information. We work very closely with corporate communications or the PR firms of those organizations. Most public companies here in the States, they do not want to communicate anything specific. So there's a lot of back and forth. It's actually why we've gone to a lot of podcasts, because we can edit them so well. Video is much harder to edit, but podcasts, you can edit so much, and we allow our customers to review that and approve it. And we work with their communication teams along the way. I did want to make one comment on social media. We have a very, and we're in the process of revising our social media policy for our 1,200 associates, because we want our associates to be able to talk about political matters that they care about. And we wanted to figure out how to do that in a way that it wouldn't, where the personal brand of our colleagues, you know, could remain what they want it to be, but also that our professional brand of our organization would not be impacted by any communication that was put out on Twitter or LinkedIn and other platforms. So it takes a lot of time and a lot of sensitivity. And, you know, when you employ this many people who care about issues, diversity, political issues, we want to give them that power. Otherwise, we won't be able to attract people. So there's a lot of time and sensitivity that goes into creating these policies. And frankly, then you have to monitor them. And that's a whole nother part of it. But that is all part of the communication. We always wonder, all those people we know that graduate with communication degrees, this is what they did.
Yeah, you know, there's one thing. It's every company is a media company. I love that claim and that idea that almost every company becomes, because of social media, the different platforms, via really podcast. In Germany, they go crazy with Clubhouse now. Okay, no, it's a new thing. We have to experience this. Let's see how it works. But there's one thing that I really want to underline is, you have to control your editorial plan, and nobody else should control your editorial plan. And this is some kind of an art, because the world outside, it's not every day very fair. And so this is so important, to stay clear to your messages, to have a clear editorial approach, and to think about what's next and what could be something where I do storytelling from story doing, or storytelling to the story doing, and to neutralize these things. For example, when you have a customer or a client, he said, I don't want to be named, don't want to be seen, then you have to translate this maybe in a story where the client is not named, but where you can say what you've done in a special way that you better done than ever than someone else. For example, when you say we had 2-3 experts on this issue, but then we added to that team 2-3 highly digital professionals, not lawyers, but digital data analysts. And this is something you can tell, even you don't have to name for whom you did it. And this is something you have to control your editorial plan. And then become more and more and get more that mindset of every company can be a media company. So go out and tell these stories, but be careful.
Is that something that lawyers need to be trained on more, need to be educated more, or is it sufficient to give them the support from their organizations and tell them, okay, you be quiet and we handle it?
It's both.
Thinking more to say, to use a very old in a way slogan, the big picture, because as a lawyer you're always specialized, so you're called in for a special problem and you're happy to solve that problem, and then you often add a disclaimer, we're doing this antitrust thing, but don't ask us if this is completely okay under tax law, we don't give. And then it's, you get very compassionate, like legal advice, so you get this bit and piece, and that's it. It's, you can't do it any other way because the specialization is so high, and it also eases your mind. You think, all right, I see a tax issue here, I mention it, but I'm not responsible for it, and what we're doing here is what the client wants, and if it later turns out that's not what the client can do because some other legal department, other law firm says, and that is specialized in something else, not possible, then you might have lost a lot of time. This happens, and I don't know, maybe there are ways to avoid that, but because you can then, your lawyers can almost sound robotic because they don't even want the bigger picture because they don't want to be liable, right? Right. I'm a restructuring lawyer, so I stay away from tax advice as much as possible, right? Because I say this is possible from a restructuring perspective and solvency perspective. So if the tax man then comes and kills you, we told you to get tax advice, and that can be very frustrating, I think, for clients, that they get these very specialized answers, and you'd never know, well, did I cover all my bases? Am I good here? Right? That must be exasperating, and I don't know how to do this to change this, but that's. I know that, for instance, under lawyers, there's this thing, well, we're doing this and let the client take care of the rest, right? And and it's their decision if they want to go this route, right? And maybe that's not a good approach, but that's very often the feeling on the part of a law.
It's what's happening. But what I hear here is one of the central issues that led to the founding of the Liquid Legal Institute and that caused us to write these books, which is that sometimes, you know, you have the impression that the legal or the lawyers just think about their thing and they don't think about what you said, the bigger picture, the client's interest, how it really raises, let's say about the business, you know? So you might give sound legal advice to the client by saying X, you can do X, Y, Z, and these are the alternatives, but maybe thinking about the repercussions from a legal perspective, at least in a communicative way, might be helpful to get a better relationship and tell these people, hey, we have in mind what your business is. It's not about, so legal is just a means to an end there for business end. And that comes back to my question. I do have the feeling that there is a need maybe for lawyers to get more out of their bubble, both in terms of their subject matter expertise maybe, but also in terms of understanding that if they're working for lawyer for clients or for businesses, they need to put on a business hat as well. This is how we started with the Liquid Legal Institute, kind of the business of legal.
You know, but it's tricky because they became lawyers because they didn't want to put on a business.
Right.
Yeah.
Right?
But actually, from a company perspective, this is what we also highlight in these relationships, that we say the better you know us and our business, the better you can give advice. And we really would expect this end-to-end view. Mm-hmm. To be honest, why should we invest? If I only want to have this very specific question answered, I don't need a relationship. I can go out and buy this very single advice. But this is not what we want. We want someone who understands our business model and maybe also thinks ahead of additional factors that we might not even see. And this is actually what is the beneficial part of a long-term relationship.
I think, Mina, you should show a recording of what you just said to every law firm you engage, because it was very passionate, very clear what you need. It was great.
But this is exactly, Roger, I guess this is so important when you think about that a lawyer has to start to think about his target groups. And now Nina added it, and please recognize our target groups. So this is really a broad approach for someone who has to or who will leave his bubble for the first time. It will be like, what the hell is going on outside? And this is something, and I guess on both sides, you need advisors inside your company, communications professionals who guide you, and you need this personal support, because today, every day, you can make a mistake, you can start a shitstorm with one little tweet on Twitter, and the thing happened, then it's gone. And to work, and it's better to work early on this knowledge stage, educational stage, awareness, creating awareness and all these things. It's better to work on that very early. It's harder to bring a tweet back and to stop a shitstorm. And this can really have a huge impact. And this is a risk and reputation thing. And don't talk about a journalist interview where a lawyer is not well prepared and is just talking about his greatness. And can you tell me a little bit more about your current client? I can talk about my current client, and I can talk about the last 10 clients I had. And this is something, and then you have a huge problem. And so it's more to invest for the companies in great communication teams, supporting them, and in individual education and knowledge and awareness.
Tom, I want to come back to something that you said struck me, because you said, well, looking at the bigger picture, you have people who maybe first of all studied law because they wanted to focus on something and wanted to be perfect and didn't want to be bothered by all these things around. And now you tell them that they have to open up. And in the prep call that we had, you also said in defense of us lawyers, you know, it's also high stakes. You know, we put a semicolon at the wrong place, and that could be like a $10 million lawsuit, you know, so we got to be particular and sticklers about it. And now, you know, we're coming to them and say, not only do you have to be really in total control of your subject matter expertise, you also need to think like a business person, and you need to be a great communicator, and you should show some empathy to the people. And can they do it? Can the lawyers change?
Well, I think there's a lot of support. There's a lot of, so Nina, to that point, we do account planning with our colleagues. We provide research. I have an entire research team. Every Friday, I have a person who finds articles that have been published on any of our customers, and we forward those. There's a lot of things that can be done to help the lawyer leader, the partner, go and really be aware of what's happening at a customer. Because you're right, the rates that you're paying, you deserve someone who understands your business, is knowledgeable about your business, has that information. So there are a lot of ways that we can support our legal professionals with this content. And you know, the teams that I have doing this, you know, they're all more junior folks starting out. We've educated them. They're learning through this process, and they're becoming, you know, that stronger legal professional as they go forward. So I think there's a lot of ways that, you know, we can support, to your point, Roger, all the different things we're asking our colleagues.
But actually, also what we said maybe in the prep call, that it might start also earlier. Yeah, is it something you need to learn during your first engagement in a law firm as a lawyer, or should it start in university or in getting the first practice experience? Is this really something that is then up to the law firms to educate the lawyers? I would say we need to really think of more a holistic education.
Yes, completely agree. I would start in university. I was studying 2 or 3 semesters Jura in Bonn, quite famous university for the field. And after 3 semesters, I felt lost, because that was really not my bubble. And but I guess start very early to create this awareness that there's a world outside, and that there are emotions and feelings outside. And when you make as a lawyer a decision, this does not reflect the emotions of the people there outside of your bubble. When you say A killed B, and after 5 years in discussing what is the consequence, then it comes out 5 years of prison, whatever, and the people outside say this is not enough. You can't explain it to the people because it's an emotional thing. When A is killing B, B is dead. And so, you know, these things you have to realize. You have to understand that the people out there don't understand decisions and things that are going on in that lawyer bubble. And this really should teach or educate very early. Completely agree to Nina's approach to go early stage in the universities and to say, hey, there's really something more than only, and I would do that with engineers and some other disciplines as well. So,
you know, and I would actually, Nina, when you're having, doing a panel review and you have a team coming in, so the, talking to the associates that are there, I had the pleasure of interviewing 5 associates from Goodwin Procter, and they, when I asked them, and they were, you know, some were 5-year associates, they were aware of customer, what it takes to the planning, how to communicate with a specific customer. And I think that's a great opportunity to see if the law firm is actually educating the non-partner ranks of their firms as how to communicate and what's appropriate and what they should be noting down, what they're hearing from you as the customer. It was amazing to watch, at least in that instance, all 5 of these, they happen to all be women. They were actually educated to listen and note things at the customer so that they could come back and discuss them. And that was, it was quite unique. It's actually a terrific conversation if you want to listen to it. It's quite good.
Let me pick up on that. We have 5 minutes left. Interesting topic you just raised. You said it were all women. Now, let me be stereotypical. Is it true that women can be the better listeners and are more communicative and more empathetic? It seems like we have in the legal profession mostly males.
Yeah, Not in the US.
No. Okay. Also not if you look at the numbers at university and also the starters, it's I think women are now more than 50% in the legal profession in Germany.
Okay. And the women
legal organizations, so women in law empowerment, all these different organizations, they know that deal origination is so critical to partnership. So they're educating younger women lawyers on how to listen more so that they can become, they're helping to grow the practices because that's the only way they're going to become partners. So there's a lot of focus on educating young women lawyers on how to be better listeners. And
actually, you would maybe expect that women are better in communicating and listening, but you are much more impressed if a man does the same.
Mm-hmm. So that's a way for us males to differentiate, you know. Just
there you go.
I don't think it is more a character thing. Is it a skill that someone has, be it a male or a woman? It's yeah. And I don't think it's typical. But
I guess when your parents teach you to listen carefully, to be aware of what's going on, there's no differentiation. You know, when you have parents, they teach you this and they gave it to you and you learned it and you saw it, how they did it, then you will keep that for the rest of your life. And I wouldn't make any differentiations because of male or female thing. It's a part that you were educated by your parents or not, and if this keeps then, and this is something we should discuss, when it starts early with your parents and your family, blah blah, but then it has to continue during your further educational way, and when then these things come up again in university, it's very helpful because it reminds you, and for the people they did not have that gift from home, for example, then they can start with this in a very early stage of their life and educational life then. I wouldn't make any differentiations there.
No. We have 2 minutes left. I want to give each of you a chance to have a final statement so you can speak, go ahead and do your final statement, and then we'll just maybe sum up what you learned on this call or what you think the future of legal marketing should be, but just as a reminder, a short brief statement, please.
Yeah, I would say that these are all skills that can be learned. It's not innate. When people say they hire people for sales because they're bubbly and energetic, I don't want those people. I want the people who are listening and focused and have learned their craft.
Well, yeah. Thank you.
And I would like to add that it's really something that is an you need to do this jointly. It's nothing you just can set high expectations. This is something you need to work on together with the law firms you're engaging.
Okay, great. Pascal?
maybe to sum up the whole session, for me, it's like test it, be brave, but stay focused on your identity, on the messages, stay in the framework of your company, freedom in a framework, but don't hesitate to start somehow to communicate, but be aligned and listen carefully to your clients and listen carefully to the people outside of your bubble.
Well, thank you. Tom, your final statement?
Things can only get better. One thing, legal problems are sometimes not fun and you don't choose them. And that makes the whole communication not happy, right? Not for the client, not for the lawyer. Somebody screwed up and it's just like you're sick. And then you have to focus on something urgent and things fall by the wayside. Don't forget this. It's not always just in a way legal advice where you choose to have legal advice because you really want it. It's just sometimes legal advice comes, you need it because you urgently need it because otherwise something terrible is going to happen. And then these funny people come in and calling them lawyers. And they don't care how they talk, how emotional they are. They're just helping you, right? And then they go away. And maybe they're happy with this. Don't forget this. Some legal problems are snarky and are not, they're thorny. And they will not get better with better marketing or with better communication. There will be still be ugly legal problems.
Wonderful closing word. Let me see. Let me do mine. What I learned, what's important at marketing is something as trivial as, Nina, you started out by saying, listen to the clients. One would think that that is a given, but apparently not so much. I also like the statement, Nicole, that there's a lot that supportive functions can help with and enable the lawyers to present themselves and their expertise better. I liked your idea, Pascal, of this early communication plan to really kind of be aware that there is this social media and these new fast moving marketing channels that you need to be aware of and plan it in early. And Tom, finally, I also love your statement. At the end of the day, it is a legal issue and it's, you know, maybe ugly and we have to deal with it. And there are some things that marketing cannot help with. Well, we're at the end of the hour, actually 1 hour, 1 minute earlier, over. I have to say that it was a wonderful discussion. I did enjoy it. Thank you very much, Nicole, Tom, Nina, and Pascal. I hope
you, Roger,
enjoyed it as well. Join in next time. Watch the communication. We'll do it in March, and most likely the call will be on sustainability. All right.
All righty.
Thank you, and have a good day.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.